Jake Hahn joins us. He's got nothing stupid to say. Always smart. He joins us from north of the border in Toronto, Canada. The T-Dot, the six. He's on the corner of Regina and I don't know what else up there. He'll tell us. At Jahan 4, H-A-H-N 4. Of course, what is it? What is it? Spadina and what? Spadina and and where?
There is a Spadina, many corners of Spadina and fill in the blank. Spadina and Queen, Spadina and King, Dundas, wherever you want to go, Gil. It's a bit of a long street.
Spadina Dundas
Square is a big one here. There's screens all over downtown. Obviously, some of the games, the World Cup games, being hosted here in Toronto. So if you walk around, it's a nice time to walk around downtown, guys. You see a lot of soccer jerseys from different countries in the square, which is another spot where a lot of people kind of gather. They've set up this big, massive screen. So if you walk by, people will be crowding games. It's creates for a fun environment in the summertime.
Yeah, man. Jake, of course, by the way, the co-host on The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL. By the way, Dundas, Kelly, D-U-N-D-A-S, Dundas.
Okay.
Jake, before we move on to your thoughts on the U.S. Open golf tournament this weekend, give us your final thoughts, if you will, on the Stanley Cup final.
Always bittersweet when it ends, guys. I'm sure you feel this about sports that you really care about where, look, I cover it. I do shows about hockey. It's a long year. It really is. It starts in September and it ends now. It's really only a couple months off. So a lot of us do look forward to the summer and a little bit of a break. But I think when it actually does come to an end, I think, oh, man, it just makes you reflect a little bit on the season and how long it was, how interesting it was, how exciting it was. And look, the best team won. I don't think there's any doubt about that at all.
Yeah.
How the Carolina Hurricanes played in this postseason. Three losses. And when you really break down the losses, and we did it on my show yesterday, one loss where they had 11 days off against the Montreal Canadiens, where they just got caught napping. They didn't look like themselves. They were clearly rusty. And then the rest factor played in later in that series, and they completely dominated Montreal the rest of the way. They lost with 3 minutes left in regulation in game one to Vegas, and they lost the double overtime game, a game in which they did have to come back from down 4-0. I'd say that was probably their worst game, but still a game that they were able to salvage. There was never a game in this postseason, guys, where Carolina was blown out outside of that Montreal game in game one where they had the 11 days off. So it truly was a dominant run. They were ready to play basically every single night. And it was really nice to see Rod, Brendan Moore, and this whole group finally get rewarded, because they really have been one of the more consistent NHL teams over the last decade or so. When you look at the regular season results, heck, even the playoffs, they're never a team that gets bounced in the first round. They often made conference finals, at least the second round. So a very consistent team, and a team that just kind of stuck with it and finally got rewarded. War came together for them this year.
Yeah, I was pointing out after VGK went up 4-0 in game three, Carolina outscored them 16-6 the rest of the way. And you're right, Rod Brind'Amour, it's hard not to root for that guy. Never about himself, right? Always deflecting. Yeah. So congratulations again to those who have Carolina fans and those who had Carolina betting wise. To the United States Open at Shinnecock Hills, we know how much you love betting golf as well. How's your golf season gone so far, by the way?
It's been okay, guys. Honestly, I look back to I think the crowning moment for me was the Players Championship Cam Young call. I was on here with you guys before that as well. That filled the pockets pretty nice. And, as you guys know, when you're betting golf, you're looking for one winner to kind of keep you afloat for a little while. And last year I had a tremendous golf betting season, and I knew it was going to be very hard to top that the next year. So it hasn't been quite as good as last year, but still pretty solid. A couple of winners here to keep me afloat, and that was a big one for me. So looking at a major championship, and I said it to you guys before we came on, a little bittersweet that hockey's over, NBA ends over the weekend as well, but we got the World Cup, we've got Wimbledon, and now we've got a golf major, and arguably golf majors in that you're coming up. Love the golf course here at Shinnecock. A very good chance that it's a grind around even par, especially with the coming in the forecast early this week, guys. This could be an absolute grind. Now, it does kind of feel like, is it Scottie Scheffler's time? Is he going to win the Grand Slam? We know his game hasn't been in peak form, but I am always scared that things could kind of click for Scheffler. At that price, though, I'm not going to be betting it, even though I go into this week thinking it kind of feels like a Scheffler track, kind of feels like a setup where Scottie can really succeed. Sam Burns, I have a lot of interest in him. I thought he got a bit of a raw deal last year at the U.S. Open on that Sunday, a tough ruling, and that led to ultimately J.J. Spahn winning a U.S. Open in very dramatic fashion. That was an excellent finish. So Sam Burns is going to have my attention. And guys, I'm going to get very tempted here by Victor Hovland. I saw enough in Canada, right here, not far from where I'm sitting. Victor Hovland gave a pretty nice account of himself, and it doesn't take much for me to get sucked in on the ceiling of Victor Hovland. And I think that he could play well at this golf course. So Hovland and Sam Burns are two guys I've got my eye on outside of the top tier favorites here.
What are our numbers on Hovland and Burns? Do we have those readily available? By the way, do you co-sign on Hovland and or Burns?
Sam Burns 37-1. Victor Hovland is 55-1. I think there's going to be some Hovland love this week. I think there. I Jake, I don't think you're going to be alone. I do co-sign on Sam Burns. Absolutely. Victor, I'll be on the sidelines for. I got to see a little bit more out of him. But hey, the approach game's round into form. We know when it's when he's hitting those irons well, he's one of the best. Burns is actually one of the more interesting cases this week. Hadn't made a decision on him yet, Jake. I think there's a lot pointing me in his direction as well. I'm wondering how much the putter gets mitigated here this week with these greens being so tough for everybody to putt on, and if the wind's blowing hard. I don't know. He's someone I haven't made a call yet on, Gil.
I don't love the number on Burns. I think that's what's really holding me back here, because especially with, you know, another good showing, it kind of fell apart for him late on the weekend. Another good showing, people feel like he's in form. He competed at the US Open last year. I don't think we're getting the best Burns number. I'd like something a little closer to 50, if I'm being honest. Look, this could just be a play on the ceiling and the talent, guys. But look, when you're picking a winner to win a golf tournament, you do have to bet on the ceiling. Seeing a guy like Hideki Matsuyama way down at around 80-1 right now, that has a little interest as what's become a bit of a long shot at this point. Again, it does scare me that he's just going to be spraying the ball. He's going to be playing from the rough too much. And obviously that's not what you want to be doing at a US Open, but I think you're going to have to be making a lot of your up and downs from wedge areas. So I do think looking for good wedge players, you referenced it, Kelly, and just, we know what a US Open is. It's you get out of position, you hack out of the rough, and you're probably not going to be able to get it up to the green, and you're going to have to play it to 100-ish yards, something in that range. And then you're going to have to make your up and down from there. You're going to have to hit a wedge to, you know, 7 feet, inside 7 feet, and try to make the putt. Those are the kind of players I'm going to be looking for this week. Good wedge players, accurate drivers off the tee. I think we're always looking for the US Open. I know distance does matter, but I think accuracy off the tee this week is also going to play a huge factor, just staying out of that thick stuff.
We're off Chris Goddard. No one likes him anymore.
Oh no, Chris Goddard's getting some love this week too. Okay. Oh yeah, he's getting Northeast guy. The way he's tore up some of the Opens overseas, he's getting some love this week.
I also think on the top of the board, guys, Xander Schauffele at that number. If I'm looking for the, you know, the top 10 type players here, just a fair number around 20-1 on Xander Schauffele, I think that could get my attention by the end of this week as well.
Jake, appreciate it, man. Sorry hockey's over, but we love all the time we spent with you, man, and let's get you back for golf more often.
For sure. I would love that, boys. Always enjoy chatting with you on Tuesday mornings, so it won't be long before we're talking hockey again. I look forward to that.
Thank you, Jake. The great Jake Hahn, everybody. Coming back with Sia Najad on the US Open and Brendan Sorley next on A Numbers Game. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Sia Najad joins us now, host and analyst for Sportsline. You can follow him on Twitter at Sia Najad, SianejAd. So what about that? See, I guess we should start there. Are you immediately looking to bet guys who are teeing off late Thursday, fading early tee times on Thursday? Is that where we start on this?
Like Kelly said, my initial impression was that this was going to be the reverse of that, but the weather is on the move. So it's really hard to say right now, because I mean, you're looking at those gusts and the general wind speeds. I mean, it doesn't look like you're going to get a good crack at it necessarily in the morning or the afternoon. As of this morning, I was thinking it was going to be an AM advantage for Thursday. At this point, I think we have to wait and see. But yeah. Looking at this, I would lean to PM AM. The good news for me is, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, Gil and Kelly, but the outrights that I have my eye on are basically split in the two waves. Like it just so happens, yeah. like my guys aren't necessarily in one wave or the other. They're kind of split among the two. I don't know. Again, that's probably not a good thing. I probably need to be more exact with the weather, but the weather's not exact.
You know what? Right now, and it's going to affect everybody.
You know what? And that point might be the best of all, which is, you know what? Everybody's going to try to chase the weather. Maybe not. Maybe just absolutely not trying to do that is the way to go.
Sia knows as well as anybody too. One of the mistakes that we have to be aware of it. But a lot of times when you try to get, you think you can get on one end of the weather ends up shutting everything down. Yes. And there is rain expected Thursday too. It shuts everything down and moves everybody back, and it doesn't affect anything. So
Sia, what did you end up betting? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, I was also going to say there's a possibility if these gusts are what they look to be, play might get delayed. So you might think you're, and I'm just speculating, of course, but if the greens can't hold the golf ball, for example, like maybe they delay play long enough where that wave that you thought existed actually doesn't exist because the players in the quote bad wave end up playing Friday morning in what ends up being a good wave. So it's really, really hard to say.
Yeah, that might be the best path. Just try to, you know what, just make it, do your handicapping as you normally would. And just go with that. What are you smirking at?
No, I'm just the way we see it, this golf course. It's like, well, at least we haven't seen this golf course play before, Sia, where someone's right. had to hit a moving putt in the wind. You know, it's yeah. At least we it's haven't seen that before. And that is really, I mean, one of the biggest storylines. If you guys aren't aware, for Shinnecock Hills coming out of the 2018 U.S. Open, there was a lot of criticism over this course being way too tough in the wind on that third round, and it looks like we might be getting into it again.
The best part of having Kelly on the desk, there's many great parts about having Kelly on the desk, but one of my favorites is his face gives away that he's thinking something.
I'm just watching Phil Mickelson do it, just hit that putt, man.
All right, Sia, what did you bet?
So I've got a couple that I've already bet. And then honestly, I wouldn't mind getting Kelly's opinion on a couple of others. Now it's Tuesday. I like Matt Fitzpatrick. I bet him right away, not knowing any weather, tee times or anything. Matt Fitzpatrick is a guy that no matter what you're looking at, whether it's recent form, his ability to close, the tee to green numbers, the approach numbers, accuracy off the tee, Matt Fitzpatrick is going to check the box there. And honestly, when it comes to difficult conditions, I think Fitzpatrick is that guy that you want, among other guys like your Scottie Schefflers. But I certainly think Fitzpatrick fits that category. Another guy that fits that. Now, Fitz is in that 22 to, we see it here. He's looking at 23.5 to 1. Yep. Tommy Fleetwood at the same price is a little interesting. I would think he'd be a little longer at most books, but either way, people aren't going to want to take Fleetwood. But I think in tough conditions, Fleetwood makes a lot of sense. The only drawback for him, other than the fact that he's really not winning a lot at all, frankly, is the approach play's been a little off. But again, on a tough course where you're going to have to be scrambling, you're going to have good around the green and good putting, Tommy Fleetwood is great for that. And I think he will keep it in play off the tee as well, like a lot of people will at Shinnecock. Those are my two kind of shorter-ish shots in that 25-1 range. I'll give you three names. And Kelly, I kind of want to bounce this off of you. I'm going to pick two of these three names: Justin Rose, Patrick Reed, JJ Spahn. And just a quick one-liner on all of them. JJ Spahn, I think, is going to be a ball-striking phenom. He's around the green play, is so deserving of some criticism, but he's gained around the green in five in a row. We know he rises to the occasion. Patrick Reed is just a magician, especially when the course conditions are tough. And Justin Rose, you never know when he's going to pop. But when he does pop, it's usually at events like this with tough conditions and tough fields. And then all of a sudden, Justin Rose is that dude. And I think in that 50-ish to one range, he makes some sense.
Yeah, real quick thoughts, I would say. Justin Rose, I think, is rated out higher for me all season long than I've expected. See, I actually thought I would be more interested in him this week than I ended up. So a pass on him. Patrick Reed, I can almost never get on board with, but hard to argue with his majors so far this year. And JJ Spahn, I am definitely on board with already. It will be a bet for me. I've bet him a few times here recently. So that would be my one pick from those three for sure.
See, have you added any first round leader stuff, anything like that yet?
Well, I will say this. No, because tee times like literally just came out. But I will say this. If we think that AMT times are a thing, for Thursday, for example. I will just mention that Tommy Fleetwood, Patrick Reed, and JJ Spahn all have AMT times. Obviously, the reverse is true for the other two guys I mentioned. Justin Rose has a PMT time, and Matt Fitzpatrick has a PMT time. So depending on where we all land on the weather for Thursday specifically, that group of five, I'll be on at least two in the PM or at least three in the AM.
All right. See ya. Last thing before you go. Brendan Sorsby has decided to enter the NFL supplemental draft. That is the correct outcome of this, right? The only way out of this.
The correct outcome is that people were listening to our show last week. Mm-hmm. They heard our dissertation, not just mine, but Kelly's plea to common sense. And everybody finally came to their senses. Yes, this is the rightful path on this whole mess.
There you go. See you, Najad. Golf handicapper by day, attorney by night. Or the other way around. I can't remember. It might be the other way around. Thank you, Sia. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
At Sia Najad, by the way, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D, again, host and analyst for Sportsline. Ladies and gentlemen, he comes to us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. It is Mark Borchardt, Base Winner, basewinner.com, at Base Winner on Twitter. How you doing, Mark?
Gil, I'm doing great, man. You know, talking about the draw, I recall a conversation we had about playing the draw parlay.
Yes.
And so I was watching the scores yesterday. I said, I hope Gil has this draw parlay in all four games. That thing would have paid a brick for you.
Do you remember that back in the day, the draw parlay? Yeah, no, just straight draws, baby. Straight draws. It's been going well. But again, as I said at the beginning of the show, you know what the smart thing would be now? To just not do them anymore. I can't do that. Going to have to take a loss before I do that. This is how this kind of thing works. No draws in Major League Baseball. I don't think that's part of the game. You have some plays today. Let's start there.
Well, it should be a part of the game. I think they should draw. I hate the ghost runner on second, but that's another story. As far as today goes, I like the Phillies. I'm pretty high on this team. In fact, I think that there's some value in the division market as well. We're talking about Philly, but for today, I think it's a good idea. You can play them on the run line. You can put them in a parlay, and I did both, Gil. I really like this Phillies bullpen. In fact, I have them rated number one in baseball. That goes a long way for me. And if you see how important maybe one guy in the bullpen is, you know, Miller got put on bereavement and it took the Padres bullpen down from 2 to 8. So this bullpen's very important when you predict a game. And I think that they have a big edge against the Marlins bullpen here. And then I think they have a good starting pitching edge too. I've got Jesus Luzardo at 15th in the base winner ratings. And, you know, I bet on him a few times, Gil, and Jesus has just been all right, but as the Doobie Brothers would say. But I think based on all the underlying stats, I think he's ready to go here. So Philly -1.5 and in the first leg of the parlay, Gil.
Phillies who crushed the Marlins yesterday by a touchdown, 7-0. And for those who don't know, and I'm not sure if the Phillies and Marlins are aware of it either, Kelly, but the June standings, this is a monster series between the Marlins and the Phillies. Marlins started out the series with a 2-win lead over the Phillies. That, of course, has been reduced to 1 now. The Phillies tried to knot up the most wins at 10 in this ballgame today. So that's a run line on the Phillies. You are also going to take the run line on the Cubs today, which warms my heart because the Cubs are trying to get to 500 in the month of June. And then you're parlaying the Cubs and Phillies on top of that, yes?
Yeah, the Cubs, you know, people were talking about how the Cubs haven't produced offensively, but I looked even in June, they're 10th in baseball in ISO power, which is a pretty good stat. But more importantly for this game, I have them third in offensive ratings against a 28 team with the Rockies. They've got a middling bullpen by my number 16, but the Rockies are 26th. And then we get a big edge in starting pitching today. Cabrera, I've got number 30 in baseball versus Feltner, number 98. So I think, you know, when you run the simulations, you've got the Cubs -1.5 is a good idea. And that's +114. And I put the Phillies and the Cubs in a parlay, and it pays +140 today. So I think that those are good ideas, Gil.
I love that because if that happens, right, 10 is the most wins thus far in the month of June, and we're only 3 wins back at that point. If all that goes down, there we go, Cubbies. Let's go.
So, Gil, so you have the Cubs in for June.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the Phillies. You know, I'm going to run that. I've got the current month sims I can run. I'll go ahead and post that on Twitter, as it's interesting to me what it'll spit out. But,
well,
What a great market that is. That's
it's
cool
such
market.
A great market. And I will tell you this: it won't spit out the Cubs because the handicap on the Cubs, and I'm glad to hear some of your offensive numbers corroborate what mine were, but the handicap on the Cubs was these first 15 games against the likes of the Rockies, the Athletics, and the Giants. This is what they were supposed to exploit. At best, right, at best, they'll be 8-7. That ain't going to get it done because then it's the hard part of the schedule. So like the Mariners last week, it might just be cosmetically close in the end. But who had the Marlins, right? 10-3 thus far out of the gates in the month of June. You do have more picks besides. So it's Phillies run line, Cubs run line, then a Phillies Cubs money line parlay. So the parlay is not with run lines. Let's keep in mind the parlay is actually with the money lines as opposed to the straights were on the run lines. Reds Mets, you are playing the total in this one at the Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, I like this. Good opportunity. The Reds, fifth in baseball offensively and 30th in baseball from a bullpen standpoint. So that's going into the handicap. As well as, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the Q1 show about the umpires and how I was looking forward to not having to use them as much because of the ABS system. And, you know, if anything, I think there's more importance that should be paid attention to these umpires because they're still making a huge difference in these games, even with the ABS. So anyway, Torres is the home plate umpire tonight. He's a plus 13% from a base winner ERA standpoint, if you will, Gil. And so that goes into the handicap. I got 11.7 runs projected. It's 9.5. That's a good opportunity to play an over, Gil.
And I will, by the way. I think people should answer that when someone says, if you will, just be like, I will. I will indeed. I'll accept that. Also an over in the Diamondbacks-Angels game as well.
Yeah, this is the same idea with the umpire, Ed Moscoso, Gil.
Oh.
Who can forget?
Who could forget?
7% more likely to have runs than an average umpire. But, you know, the Diamondbacks offense versus left-handed pitching, it's surprising to me. They're best in baseball by scant percentage points over the Dodgers, Gil. But they are when you do the ratings. And I think that the Angels, I like Detmers as a starter, but they're bullpen 28th in baseball. So all that went into the calculus, Gil, as you would say, and it's projected close to 10 runs. So I think that's a good idea to play an over there.
Ladies and gentlemen, five plays.
Yeah, fire.
From Mark Borchardt, one parlay and two run lines and then two totals, two overs actually, specifically from Mark. Before you go, next segment. So every time Kelly and I set out to do MLB awards analysis, the NL Cy Young race is so awesome that we only end up doing the NL Cy Young race. So we're promising everybody that next segment, we're actually going to talk AL Cy Young and AL MVP. We're going to do that next segment. But for you, just here in the last minute, can you tell us who you would vote for NL Cy?
Mizorowski. I mean, I've never seen any kind of like just to the eye. And there's some debate, and I think it was really good. It was, gosh, the Sheehan. He made some really good observations about.
Yeah.
Yes, Joe. Yeah. And Sheehan newsletter is great. I love that newsletter, by the way. But he made a good point about the innings pitched for Mizorowski. Yes. And how it's got. I don't know are the voters going to penalize him if he's striking out 13, 12 guys and then he takes a couple weeks off? I mean, it'll be interesting to see because all the metrics in the past would indicate that it would be bad for Mizorowski. But I think, gosh, if you guys striking double-digit guys out, they put him down for 3 weeks, I don't see how you can hold that against him, Gil.
It's a great point. The Tom Tango formula, which is tried and true, would in the net penalize, there is a strikeout element, but in the net, would it penalize Mizorowski for having less innings pitched? It's an interesting point, but I'm with you on the Miz. Mark, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Gil.
I don't understand why anybody would bet on Bobby Witt Jr. And Paul Carr happens to be our next guest. He is a very big Kansas City Royals fan and may have himself a Bobby Witt Jr. MVP bet. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, to talk World Cup. But apparently he's got a bone to pick with me. What do you got?
Well, or Gil, I have Bobby Witt right here, bobblehead. He's not happy with you either. So the case for Bobby Witt is basically, obviously, he's a really good hitter, top five-ish hitter. His offense has not been quite what Jordan is this year, but he's probably the best defender in baseball or very close to it this year.
Granted.
And one of the best base runners. He's lead the league in stolen bases, just put it simply. So that's the case, is that, sure, Jordan's having a better hitting season. I'm not going to argue that. But you factor in those other things, and Bobby is more valuable as a baseball player. So that's the case for him.
Wow.
I can't wait to interview the MVP voters who vote for him and go, he's the best base runner in baseball. That's why I voted for him.
Chicks dig the long ball, not the guy who works hard. The
base running. No, all of that is true. Listen, I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying I don't think I'd bet him now, especially at that price. He's not close to these guys. But that's the case. There's the case from Paul Carr. We accept the case. Paul, is it? I'll ask you what I asked of Drew Densick earlier. Is this world? Is it just this easy? Just bet draws this easy?
Man, I will say the prices, especially. I mean, today's a little bit of an exception because we got a lot of favorites going. But the prices today on the draws are all north of +300, and anytime you get 300 or more for me, that is very tempting. So, you know, you want to sprinkle on like almost any draw today. I don't hate it. I mean, I think broadly the gap is probably smaller between, I mean, almost any of these teams than general perception is. Maybe that skews the market a little bit. But yeah, these draw prices are pretty juicy. And yesterday obviously was a nice one if you played all those.
Yeah, I'm going to start with game one. If that works out, I'm going to go to game three and game four if they all keep working out. Norway, Iraq.
I don't hate the draw in any of these games today. I mean, I think Senegal is a solid second tier team. Not shocking if they draw France. Algeria, I think, is feistier than most. So could they come out and pull off a point against Argentina? Sure. Jordan, I mean, I won't say I've been grinding Jordan tape or anything like that. They're one of the least known teams at the tournament. But Austria is a very high risk, high reward style. So if they, salvage a goal and sneak something out, it wouldn't be stunning either.
Norway, Iraq, you would even take a flyer on that one on the draw?
That one's the toughest one. I mean, it's obviously the longest odds. Yeah. That's probably the one. I mean, I would put that fourth on my power rankings of I'd like to play this draw today.
That tracks. As the kids say, that tracks. All right. What did you bet today? What do you like?
All right, what do I have today? I have under 2.5 in France, Senegal, -105. This one's a little one of those throw up in your mouth plays because both these teams have lots of offensive weapons. France is loaded, Mbappe, Olise, et cetera. Senegal has Sadio Mane, used to play for Liverpool. He's older, but they still are really fast on the counterattack. But both these teams are also pretty solid defensively. France, under their head coach, I think I've mentioned, is kind of defense first on the whole, even though they have all those attackers. So I could see them being conservative here. Senegal gave up kept 8 clean sheets and 10 qualifiers. So they're pretty solid veteran team defensively. They'll know how to handle the different wrinkles that France will throw at them. So I think this could be kind of a, early feel them out type of thing under 2.5. So you're getting, obviously 1-0, 2-0 either way and 0-0, 1-1 on the draws. I like that at -105.
Okay. Well, that checks out for draw players as well. Under 2.5 goals in that one. How about, let's talk about, let's skip Norway and Iraq because you don't have a play in that one. But let's go to Colombia and Uzbekistan.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Wednesday. Uzbekistan, another one of the very unknown teams in this tournament, just from a general, even just soccer knowledge. They have one guy who plays for Man City. That's about it from a top European league standpoint. I think Colombia is one of the dark horses I mentioned a few times. Tons of offensive weapons. I think they will come out and try to prove that here today. And Uzbekistan's it's a level up from where they've been. They have kind of slowly been on the rise. They've done really well in a lot of youth tournaments the last few years. But this is a different animal at the World Cup. And you're facing, again, a Colombia team that will attack you from all directions with Luis Diaz from Bayern and several other guys. So I like Colombia. I'll lay the goal in half. Getting plus money at 115 for me.
Okay. So today, France, Senegal, under 2.5 goals, the first of the four games today. Tomorrow, Colombia, -1.5 goals versus Uzbekistan. And then Thursday, let's project forward, Canada and Qatar. Both teams tied. Both teams drew in their first game. Qatar in unbelievable fashion in the 94th minute.
Yep. Yeah. Both these teams got relatively late goals to tie. So now we're obviously into the second set of games. So you're trying to think through motivations as well as you've seen these teams on the field and have a little better sense of what they're going to do at the tournament. And you mentioned Qatar did very little. They had 6 shots the whole game, 0.6 expected goals. They just didn't do a lot. And that's kind of what was expected of them after no points 4 years ago. Just a new program to the international stage, really. Canada didn't do a ton either, only 13 shots, 1.2 expected goals, but they did get their one late. And that's even though they were chasing the game most of the time because they gave up a 21st minute goal to Bosnia-Herzegovina. So I'm not sure either team has a ton of attack. They're both defense first teams, try to hit you on the counter. So I think that's how they'll approach this game from a defensive standpoint, try to steal a win. Because we're at the point, if you get 4 points in the group, you're almost guaranteed to go through.
Yeah.
And you might be guaranteed to go through by the time some of these teams play their second game. So if you're either one of these teams, you'd love to get a win here and essentially seal your fate in a good way and ease up the pressure on that last game. So, but I don't think either team here is going to just rip things open and go for a win. They'd rather try to defend first, try to steal a 1-0 win for either one. So under 2.5, that's a long way of saying is what I'm playing here at plus 110.
There you go. France, Senegal under 2.5 goals today from Paul. Colombia minus 1.5 versus Uzbekistan tomorrow. And then Canada, Qatar under 2.5 goals on Thursday at plus 110. Paul, I will conclude with you the same way I did with Drew, give you a crack at this question, which is simply after the USA beat Paraguay 4-1, it has started. Soccer fever is now here in the United States. Did that performance, you said famously, round of 16 is par. Does that performance by itself alter that for you?
A little bit. It so much depends on the draw because, you know, yes, they win the group. They're going to play almost certainly a worse team in the round of 32. You got to win that. You get the round of 16, you're going to run into like, you know, an Argentina type where you're just not the better team. So I guess it just kind of raises the ceiling a little bit because if they can play like that, you can hang with just about anybody. And so, yeah, is it making a semifinal run off the table? Like, it's not. I don't know that it ever was, but it just feels a little bit more realistic. But so much is just dependent on what can you do or who you run into in that round of 16. And it's probably going to be a better team. So I don't know that it changes it, but I guess it probably does a little bit. Like, if they get to the round of 16 and lose, you might feel a little disappointed. But it so much depends on what team you might lose to.
Yeah. I like the way you put it, though. Par is round of 16, and then we can all work from there. We'll see, but this country is now soccer crazed. That's all it took.
It's fun.
And here we go. Should be a fun summer. Paul, thank you so much.
You bet.
Paul Carr, kind enough to join us even after the Bobby Witt Jr. slander.
Right.
Very nice of him.